Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is notoriety. Each of my guests will be discussing a topic that is either famous or infamous. My next guest is an historian who looks at scandals, deception, and depravity among the world's leaders. We'll discuss the forthcoming marriage of Prince William and Kate Middleton and other royal unions. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Michael Farquhar is a former Washington Post writer and editor. He spent 10 years with the Post specializing in history. He's appeared as a commentator on such programs as History Channel's Russia, The Land of the Tsars, and The French Revolution. Michael is the author of three bestsellers, A Treasury of Royal Scandals, A Treasury of Deception, and his latest book, which is titled Behind the Palace Doors, Five Centuries of Sex, Adventure, Vice, Treachery, and Folly from the Royal Britain. Michael lives in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Michael. How are you doing today?
Bill, thank you for having me on. I'm doing great.
Well,
glad
good.
To be here.
Glad to have you here, because as the excitement mounts towards tomorrow's wedding, you are the exact type of thought leader that I want to have. Now, you've examined the British royals, the House of Windsor in particular. Some of their behavior's been good, and let's face it, some of their behavior's been naughty. So what makes the royal family so interesting to you as an author?
I think it's because royalty itself, first of all, I'm a lover of history, and so the royal family represents to me a continuity of 1,000 years of history, of British history. So that in itself makes them interesting. I would not call the current crop quite as interesting as some of their forebears, given that I guess they don't have as much power as some of the older kings and queens did. And
very true.
With the power comes the misbehavior on a more epic scale.
Well, it's interesting, though, Michael. Even though they don't have all the power, they still have all the human foibles that we all do. But how do you stack up the current British royals' behavior compared to, say, some of the other royal houses of Europe? Are they as bad, worse? Where would you rank them?
Well, your point about they're human and they're human, subject to human foibles is well taken. And I think what's great about royalty is that those foibles become exaggerated with the idea that you were born superior or you're born with power. In terms of how the current royal family compares to the rest of Europe, it's kind of no comparison. Nobody really even notices the other royal families of Europe. The bicycle monarchies, as they're called, they're just so relatively bland. The world's focus is really on the British, and so everything that they do becomes magnified.
The bicycle monarchies? What do you mean by that, Michael?
So almost among the people that they're just kind of there's an element of ordinary folk about them.
All right, so Elizabeth's sister in the Netherlands is just another Dutch citizen, just a little bit higher status. That's all, right?
Exactly. It doesn't the British monarchy as powerless as it is now, still has so much of that pomp and circumstance that has been associated with kings and queens for so long. And therefore, I think we think in terms of the British royals as the royals of Europe.
All right. Well, that's well said. So let's drill down on the British royals, the Windsors, because they've been in the news lately. Between the movie The King's Speech and now the royal wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton, you know, they're just right there in the forefront for everybody. So I'd like you to comment on this. And this is a pet peeve of mine, so give me a second to set this up. The forthcoming royal wedding, is this the beginning of the end for the royal family in England? Now, hear me out on this point. Kate is a commoner. And some people, that's very pleasing because she's just one of the people and she's marrying into the royal family. But the royal marrying a commoner, that dilutes the royal blood. It dilutes that sense of power that you alluded to earlier, that you're born into something very, very important. And the entire premise of royalty is based on the fact that the bloodlines has been royal and it's been continuous for over 1,000 years. Now, if you play this out, Kate and William have a child. That child is half royal. If that child marries a commoner, which is a precedent set by their father, Prince William, then that child now becomes one quarter royal, so on and so on and so on. And eventually you wean the royal blood out of the family or you diminish it. So what happens then, you know, the British people are paying huge amounts of taxes to support the royal lifestyle of Queen Elizabeth, Prince Charles, Prince William, etc., etc. At some point, won't they just stop going, hey, if the prince and the queen are common like us, there's so much common blood, why should we continue to pay huge amounts of taxes to support them and eventually wean away from the royal blood? What do you say to that?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think in terms of the royal blood, it could use a little diluting. I mean, this is centuries and centuries and centuries of royals marrying royals, and nothing good has come of it in terms of various defects, hemophilia being one of them. I mean, Queen Victoria really literally was the grandmother of every monarchy in Europe, pretty much.
True.
This could be viewed the opposite of what you're saying. With the gene pool being as shallow as it is right now, give it a little bit more depth, give it a little bit more diversity.
And from a biological standpoint, I would have to agree with you, Michael, but from the standpoint of the British people actually financially supporting this lifestyle, and let's face it, it's lavish. You know, they've grown accustomed to the lifestyle that they're in. Won't at some point the British people just wake up one day and say, why are we paying so much money for a bunch of people who are now almost as common as we are?
They've woken up and said that a number of times. I mean, they took away the Queen's yacht, if you remember that.
And she's heartbroken over it.
Right, but I think the idea, especially that the core family are enjoying lavish lifestyles, I would disagree. I would think that they are probably, particularly the Queen herself, for example, is probably one of the most hardworking people imaginable. I mean, this is a woman in her 80s now who is still doing the same job she's been doing for nearly 60 years.
Right.
Working hard to represent Britain, traveling the world, endless receptions and investitures and cocktail parties, all making small talk. Can you imagine a life of nothing but small talk?
Don't get me wrong, Michael. And we're talking to Michael Farquhar, everybody, author of the book Behind the Palace Doors, 5 centuries of sex, adventure, treachery, folly from Royal Britain. But don't get me wrong. I don't discount that Queen Elizabeth, A, is one of the good people, and B, is a very hardworking individual. But when she goes to her closet, they're nothing but designer clothes. When she puts on her jewels, she's putting on the crown jewels of Britain, which are unparalleled.
Right.
When she hops in her car, she's driving a British Range Rover.
Because that's what's expected of her. I mean, she is the very embodiment on some level of Britain. And so if she's representing Britain around the world or at home, she needs to represent that in a beautiful way, in a magnificent way, in a regal way. So these, you know, the crown, the jewels, et cetera, that while most of them are public property, there's some that are in the family's possession, but it's the money that they bring in far outweighs the money that's put towards them, I would say.
All right. Well, that's a good observation. We're talking to Michael Farquhar, everybody. And just the nature of that heated exchange that we just had, Michael, it shows that even in America, we get very passionate about the royals. Why do you think Americans in particular are fascinated by the ruling family?
I think it's a good question, but we absolutely are intoxicated. I mean, I think we're intoxicated by celebrity in general. And then you take, I think you take royalty, and it's putting celebrity on an entirely different level. I mean, celebrities are transitory. This is, as we spoke earlier, 1,000 years of history and there's so much mythology and romance that is associated with all those centuries of ruling families and the power that they wielded in their romances. That it's you know, almost inbred in us. I don't know how fascinated we would be if we hadn't shaken off the monarchy to over 200 years ago, whether we would have the same feelings that we do now. But you're right; it's deep within us, and even the people that profess no interest certainly belie themselves away. It's interesting when Queen Elizabeth ever comes over here for a state visit. How the senators are all fawning over her and falling over themselves for proximity to her. There's just something about that enduring institution of the monarchy and everything it represents.
Yeah,
that fascinates us.
It is. We're talking to Michael Farquhar, author of the book Behind Palace Doors. All right, Michael, now I'm going to ask you to be a little bit of a prognosticator here. I mean, secretly, the British odds makers are handicapping the marriage of Prince William and Kate. Now, some people say that it's a true love affair, but these are the same pundits that said it was a true love affair between Prince Charles and Lady Diana back in 1982 as well. So if Prince William looks at his family for role models, he sees a real mixed bag. On the positive side, there's his grandmother, Queen Elizabeth. There's his great-great-grandmother, the Queen Mom. There's his great-great-great-grandmother, Queen Victoria. They were all very loyal, very true, followed the tradition and never got divorced, all of that kind of thing. More closely related to him, though, there's some real blackguards. I mean, here's his father, divorced Prince Charles, his uncle, whom they call Randy Andy, his great-great-uncle, Edward VI, who actually abdicated the kingship to marry Wallace Simpson. So if you take a look at it, if you had to handicap the marriage's chances of survival, what do you think the odds are, and what does it mean to the monarchy and the people of Britain if William and Kate do divorce?
Wow, well, that's a lot. Let's just start with the premise that 50% of all marriages fail.
Okay. Doesn't bode well right off the bat.
So those are some interesting odds right there. Then you toss in the fact that he's royal, which does, you know, create its own set of complications. I think it would be very difficult to say. You said in introducing that question about all the successful marriages, you know, those of his grandparents or his great grandparents, George VI and Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, it was an amazing marriage, an amazing partnership as they led Britain through World War II. Of course, then again, as you said, they are his aunts and his aunt and uncles. All those marriages have failed. I would say it's hard to tell. I think they've had an opportunity to know each other and be with each other for a long time, which historically has not been a luxury afforded very many royals. So that could bode well for them.
And time will tell on that, won't it, Michael? We're talking to Michael Farquhar, everybody, about the British royal family, the upcoming wedding of Prince William and Kate Middleton. Let's go back to one of the people that I mentioned setting up that question, and that is his uncle, Edward VI, who abdicated to marry Wallace Simpson. And again, as a historian looking at that period of time, let me ask you to sort of rewrite history. If Edward VI had not abdicated, and if he had stuck to the royal line and done his duty, what sort of king do you think Edward VI would have made as a wartime king during World War II?
Bill, excuse me for being pedantic on you, but it's Edward VIII.
Hey, sorry.
Just so there's no confusion, Edward VI was Henry VIII's longed-for son. If Edward VIII had remained king, this is one of those what-ifs of history that I think are pretty clear. I think Britain may very well have failed in World War II. You had a real lightweight in this guy. People consider his stepping down from the throne to marry the woman that he loved the love story of the 20th century, when in fact it really was just a matter of a lightweight who didn't really want to bear the responsibility of the crown. And probably nowhere in English history has the crown been more important than it was during World War II. And his brother, George VI, who took over after he stepped down, who had no expectations of him with his stammer and his shyness, this is the king from the king's speech. He actually emerges as this great monarch who, with his wife by his side, stands up and embodies embattled Britain. Where Edward VIII, just to give you an idea of the kind of guy he was, while Britain is undergoing the Blitz, the former king, Edward VIII, is down in the Bahamas serving as governor down there, and he's complaining about his accommodations. and it's August, and it's too hot, and he wants to take a leave of absence. And Churchill is just appalled by this and just says, comment is needless.
Exactly.
It's a great question because it's a great example of two brothers, one family, what was and what could have been. And thank God George VI became king and Edward VIII stepped down because a tremendous lightweight.
Very true. We're talking to Michael Farquhar, author of the book Behind the Palace Doors. Michael, what did you get out of writing this book?
Well, first of all, the joy of writing it. This is the history that I love. I think there's just story after story that you just can plunge into with enthusiasm. And as you're researching, you're finding out more and more that you didn't know. And, you know, not all of it's scandalous or, this back to George VI, it was really great to write about a hero king, an entirely unexpected, hero. As we were discussing at the top of the program, I think it's fascinating to watch, to observe human nature to begin with. And then when you see human nature magnified by royalty and power, it makes human nature all the more interesting. So it's nothing but a pleasure to study this and to write about it.
Well, and your book is nothing but a pleasure to read. We've been talking to Michael Farquhar, author of the book Behind the Palace Doors, Five Centuries of Sex, Adventure, Vice, Treachery, and Folly from the Royal Britain. Michael, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I don't actually have a website for this book, but if they... I don't know what to tell you.
Well, they can go to all the usual places, Amazon.com, of course.
Of course, yes.
And our own local bank of books, two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street, both in Ventura. Michael, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, Bill. I really enjoyed it. Well, I appreciate the lively discussion.
All right, Michael. Thanks. We'll have you back soon. Take care. Have a good one.
You too.